Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present
Hello and welcome to Gist Radio. We are a casual radio station where we broadcast when we have something to say. Gist stands for Getting Your Shit Together, and we broadcast important interviews and information for artists and creators of all kinds. For more information on Gist, please log into our website at www.gyst-ink.com, where you will find free resources, software, and publications for artists. You can email us and let us know what you would like to hear about at info@gyst-ink.com. Thanks for tuning in.
Welcome to Creative Orange County, the radio show where we interview Orange County, California, and sometimes LA. We let them in too. Creative stars, artists, entrepreneurs, angel investors, CEOs, nonprofit leaders. My name is Susan, and I will be your host. Well, we're here for a 2 o'clock show today, just such demand for Creative Orange County, the radio show. And joining me today is a very interesting gentleman called Craig Causen. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Craig, not too much, though, because he's got a very interesting biography, and we don't want to tell you too much because we'll go back to it. But he grew up in Newport Beach in the 60s and 70s. Wow, that must have been very different than 2011. And he had a very, very typical Southern California childhood, he says. Lots of outdoor activities, swimming, body surfing, horseback riding. However, his formative years were very unusual in many ways. He's the grandson of Academy Award-winning animation director and creator Chuck Jones, and he was the middle child of Jones's only child, Linda, who, with her father, is credited with launching the animation art history in the late 70s. And he's got a computer engineering degree from UCLA. He went back and was accepted in to UCLA's Anderson School of Business, their Strategic Leadership Institute. And when he graduated and did that, he went on and started working for Hughes working for some computer systems having to do with the Navy. And he did that for about a decade. So we're going to really kind of stop there because we want to talk about kind of early Craig and welcome him. We haven't heard him yet, so say hello.
Well, hi, Susan. Hey, thank you. That's parts of my life that I often forget about. I came out of school in the mid '80s and went to Hughes Aircraft, and wow, those are some great memories, I have to say. You know, I always talk about I'm a recovering engineer from my previous life.
And moved into being affiliated with artists, so that's very interesting. But you had this very unusual background. So tell us maybe how that kind of maybe set the stage or influenced, you know, where you are now, and we'll tell listeners a little bit more about that in a minute
Sure.
or two or five.
Well, I tell you, I guess really going back, as you mentioned, my grandfather being Chuck Jones, it seems like every day that I meet somebody and kind of introduce that is part of my lineage, is that really they always talk about, I grew up with Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner and Daffy Duck and things like that. In fact, today a lady said, you really did grow up with them, didn't you? And I guess I did. I mean, it was part of everyday life for us to be able to have access to the Looney Tunes. I guess everybody did to some extent in the 60s and 70s. But, some of my fondest memories were going down to where my grandmother lived, and my grandfather was actually still up in Los Angeles producing creating cartoons during the week, and he'd come down on the weekends. And so down here in Orange County, my grandmother moved in the 60s, and so it was sort of he would come back and forth, but on the weekends he'd bring a collection of his 16mm films, and we'd go hang out down at his house, and he'd talk a little bit about them just casually, and I'd get to bring a friend on occasion, and we'd sit on the floor and hear that little Bell and Howell movie projector with a clickety-clack going on, and when we were lucky, we got a take part and you know, be the projectionist for the night or something like that. But, you know, watch a half a dozen cartoons right there in his living room. So maybe a little bit different than most people, but I think we all have the same experience of enjoying and growing up with those characters.
And did you realize just the significance of you know, what he was doing and creating and his work at that time? Or was it just kind of like, oh, this is my grandfather and this is what he does?
You know, it was really the latter. I think it was neat, and people would go, oh, that's really neat. But, you know, then they'd say, well, my grandfather or my uncle, you know, does this. He works at a weightlifting place. Oh, well, let's go over there. That sounds like a great thing. Let's go see that. So really, I didn't get the impact of what his work and his career brought to the world until really probably the early 90s when I left my engineering and computer development career and came kind of, as I say, get sucked into the family business. But I came into the business to automate the company. But I really, as I occasionally got to travel with Chuck and listen to people's stories about the impact of either his writings or his cartoons and the memories that they had, sometimes being perhaps even the only fond memories they had of that they remember of their childhood, sitting with their father or something like that on Saturday mornings, and both of them giggling, and they would talk about these in 2 or 3 or 4 minutes and convey that and just say, thank you so much for bringing that to my life. So, you know, to answer your question, at the time, I really had no idea. And he was just my grandfather. I always called him Chuck. I don't think he ever really wanted to be grandpa. I mean, that was just sort of it. My grandmother was Nani, and my grandfather was Chuck. And when my kids were starting to grow up, they said, I said, well, I don't think it's going to be appropriate because, you know, one, they're your great grandchildren, and so they have to call you something. And I said, well, okay, you know, Grandpa Chuck is fine. And he said, you know, it's very odd being, okay. He said, all right, I tell you what, I'll be a great grandfather as long as you put a comma after the great. So, I mean, that was sort of Chuck in the way that he, you know, saw life, but he certainly, all three of us grandchildren and then all of the great-grandchildren who were fortunate enough to meet him and spend time with him have such fond memories because he treated everybody, you know, uniquely. And I think that was something that really, as I meet people who knew him throughout sometime in their life, that he was always genuine, right there, present, and there was something about him that he brought to the interaction, whether it was a minute or 10 minutes, and you know, I think that was something really special, unique about him as a human being.
But you went on this path with computer engineering. So how did that all come about?
From the time that I was very, very young, numbers and math and science was completely intriguing to me. And I had a really impactful experience my senior year in high school. There was a physics teacher, Mr. Vassos, and he made science so interesting to me that it changed the direction. I'd always wanted to be a doctor. And from the time I was really, really young, and I went to UCLA and really started this. I started taking high level math and high level science fairly early with physics and whatnot, and thinking that I took the higher level math because it was more interesting, even though I really anticipated that I was going to still be pre-med and do the whole medical school thing. And about my third year, after taking all this biology and chemistry and physics and the higher level math just for the fun of it, I started to really question whether or not I wanted to go that direction. And a first year medical student who I mentioned it to that I was going to do this, and of course you don't talk to first year medical students and find out whether or not enthusiastic about medicine anymore, because they're in the throes of probably the worst year of their life as far as learning and time constraints. And so a few of the things he said kind of caught my attention, and I went, oh, maybe that's not the direction I want. So I went and talked to a dean of physics at UCLA, and he said, well, sounds like you want to be a physicist. And my dad was a chemist from Caltech, And so I think that's where a lot of the analytical
side
of things may have come from. But it was a friend, actually, that he went to Caltech with, and so I talked to him, and I said, geez, I don't think I want to be a physicist, but maybe an engineer. So I went went to the engineering department and looked at all the disciplines and went, okay, well, computers, that's very interesting. I thought computers were, this was the early 80s before computers really came on the scene and personal computers weren't even really out there at this point. And so I thought, hey, well, that's an interesting discipline. So I talked to an advisor and, you know, lots of software and lots of engineering and lots of electrical engineering. And I thought, you know, what the heck? So, you know, third year in college changed from, you know, this direction, and actually just barely graduated in 5 years. They were going to kick me out because I had too many units by the time the end of my fifth year, and I got all of my requirements in. And then, like you said, I went to Hughes Aircraft, and it was a great learning location, you know, to be able to do, you know, and figure out the disciplines of creating things. So it was fun, and it was a great time to be, as you said, in the world of defense, because there was lots of funding for it and cutting edge technology and whatnot. So for 5 years I worked there and then made a transition into the more of the business application software development. And throughout this whole time I'd been teaching at local Fullerton College and Orange Coast College and Irvine Valley College, and it just seemed to grow. And you know, I was working too much, like every 20-something probably does. But it was a great learning experience for me, and it was very, very fun to kind of look back. But as far as you asked, how did that make transition? You know, it set me up to be prepared to go and help the family business of arts. And my mother started the business back in the late 70s, and with Chuck, obviously, is the sole artist. And when she started publishing other artists, and it was growing so fast into the 90s that I used that experience to come in and kind of automate the company. And then it was a really fun place to be. And I got to see Chuck much more often than I had before. I saw him on special occasions like holidays and whatnot. But then I ended up seeing him at least 2 or 3 times a week when I was working. I thought, this is really quite an experience, so I think I'll stick around. And then art galleries started to blossom, and that's sort of the trek that I took. And then artist representation, and, you know, all of a sudden from engineering to the arts, and it's kind of all uphill from there.
Well, and working with and seeing Chuck at that, you know, at that age and in that environment was very different from being that kind of, you know, grandfather and child. But so for well, it's actually been a couple decades now that you've been at Linda Jones Enterprises in various roles, and just recently took on the position of CEO. You know, so I'd like, you know, to talk about that, because you do have galleries where you know, Chuck Jones' work and others are displayed, and also I would like to talk about too the Chuck Jones Center for Creativity, which was founded by Chuck Jones in 99, and to tell the you know, listeners about that. So what about Linda Jones Enterprises and Chuck Jones? Tell us kind of what that's all about, the galleries and such.
Sure. I mean, that is really, that's the business that was growing back, like I said, in the 80s and into the 90s that I was brought in to assist with. And then in the early 90s, we decided that galleries were a good opportunity for us to start to venture into. And so I started to actually open the galleries, and I was just sort of plugged into that position and said, okay, well, let's see, where do we want to go? So we opened up a new gallery in Corona del Mar down on the Coast Highway, and many people who know of our galleries first experienced us driving by at, you know, 45 miles an hour down in Corona del Mar and the yellow awnings that we had down there. But then we opened up in Santa Fe, New Mexico in 1993, so we've been there for 18 years. And really, I mean, it was about trying to figure out places where, one, it was a really fun artist environment, gallery environment, but also a place where Chuck enjoyed going. And so because he liked to go to Santa Fe and obviously artist appearances and to put them where Chuck wanted to go seemed like a logical thing. So we opened up that gallery, and then We ended up in San Diego. We still have a gallery down in San Diego. We used to be in an old town, you know, but we opened that gallery,
okay.
What was that, 15
okay.
years ago. And so, you know, it's just we've represented up to probably at this point close to 100 different artists in the galleries throughout the years. And as far as, for me, it's given me a whole new perspective on creativity. And so there's the transition into the Chuck Jones Center for Creativity. Back in the late 90s, there was a concept or an idea that came up within the family that really people had been impacted or continue to be impacted by Chuck's animation and by his artwork and by his writings. He's written multiple books, and that there was really something special about the way Chuck saw life and the way that he worked and the way that he created. And so the vision of being able to pass that along to people really decided, okay, well, let's create something, in essence, a nonprofit that would allow us to host exhibitions and provide programs and classes and experiences that will inspire people's creativity. So when we solidified the whole thing down in the early 2000s, and Chuck passed away in 2002, but the nonprofit was already underway, you know, nicely at that point. But when we started, like most people do, you start wordsmithing and kind of going, well, there's a meaning and a vision that is here, but what are the words that really make sense so that people will know what's going on? So when we distilled all of it down, there was that word creativity that sat there and just glared at us and said, okay, well, that is really the essence of what he did. And it could have been the Chuck Jones Center for Animation, or it could be the Chuck Jones Center for the Arts, or it could have been all these different things. But one of the great things that Chuck talked about and that people talked about when they saw Chuck was that they weren't necessarily artists. They were scientists. They were educators. They were doctors. They were whatever they were. They all had that common thread of somehow being inspired by Chuck and his work. And they told these stories about how his cartoons, either when they were a kid or when they were adult, watching them gave them this sort of this tunnel into this creative thinking. And so when we distilled all that down, we went, geez, you know, it's not just about the arts. It's not just about art. It's not certainly just not about animation. Chuck had a piece of his life that was animation, but really he started out as a traditional fine artist. He started out as at Chouinard Art Institute when he was 15 and went through a 3-year fine arts program there and anticipated that he was coming out to the world to be a fine artist. And it was 1929, and right at the beginning of the Depression, he had a revelation that he needed to eat. So he basically stumbled into this really fledgling animation business. And I mean, if you think about it, this was right at the beginning of Disney. And this is right at the beginning, even before Warner Brothers really got into the game, and Ub Iwerks was doing his thing and whatnot. So this is very, very early on, and so he found a place that allowed him to do what he loved to do, which was to draw, and then he just followed that. But he continued his fine arts career sort of on the side, but that was part of his passion. He used to go to art class every Monday night for 30 years at Chouinard, doing master's classes on life drawing and really developing his skill, because that's part of the passion. So for him, it was way beyond any individual facet. So when we said, you know what, it is the Center for Creativity, that it is a hub, and basically our whole driving force is about inspiring that creative genius that exists inside each person. So, you know, how do you find it? You know, it's going to be different for every single person, but knowing that it's there and finding a venue, finding a path that will help you to discover it and share it, well, you know, that's why we get up and do what we do every day.
And Craig is going to speak to that topic. He's a speaker at TEDx SA Artist Village, which is Saturday, October 1st, and so he's kind of given us a little bit of a preview about his talk. So what are some of the programs that you've had, that you have or are developing, you know, at the center around creativity? Because I really, you know, think that that's, I mean, everyone is creative, and I think sometimes we feel that if we're not a fine artist, maybe as Chuck was, or we aren't, a pianist, that we have, that we aren't linked somehow through creativity to the fine arts, that we aren't creative. And as you said, you know, everyone's creative, and how to find that genius within yourself, that creative genius. So what kinds of programs, you know, do you have at the center?
Well, you know, we there's such a variety of things, and most of the programs that we hold at the center are for young people. Although, you know, we skew on age groups all over the place, but it's hard to describe exactly what happens on a mechanical basis, because part of it is that each time a group gets together, it's unique, and that's part of the wonderment of the creative process. But I tell you, one of the things that really occurs on a regular basis, let's say we have a 3-week or a 9-week or whatever length it is, that Chris Gardino, our main teaching artist here at the center, he'll get in front of people. And Chuck always said that if you provide quality materials to young people, magic will happen. And really that is the basis for everything that we do, in that we provide all kinds of wonderful materials. Sometimes there's a theme. Let's say that we have a program on Saturday mornings at the center called Drop In and Draw. And it's a 3-hour program where there's lots of materials. Perhaps Chris will have a theme for the day. But if somebody comes in and says, oh, man, today I'm really interested in creating, you know, a diorama of some sort just for fun. And there's the materials there. The idea is, don't tell the young people what to do. And oftentimes, these 12-week programs, they'll look at Chris and he'll say, okay, let's get started. And they'll say, well, what do you want us to do? And Chris will say, well, what do you want to do? And they'll say, well, what do you want me to do? And it'll be back and forth for a while, because oftentimes, for the first time in their really functional life, they're not being told what to do. And I think there's absolutely time for learning, education, intellect development. You know, there's a skill set that you have to have in order to function in this world. But what I think we're missing many times is that there's not opportunity to just create and just imagine and just dream. And Chris is there, or some of the other teaching artists that we have, are there to help people through the stumbling blocks, because the skill sets that Chris has is a classic fine artist. And like I say, it's not just about the arts, but most of our programs are based around some sort of arts-based thing. But you don't have to be an artist to do it. And so there's just this inspirational time. So that's kind of the basis of most of the programs that we do. And we've done adult programs where presentations to sales forces to bring more creativity to how sales are done. There's programs to CEOs and management on how to better inspire creativity in a workforce. There's we've done things with educators on, you know, bringing more creativity and presence to education, both for the student and for the educator. So, you know, it kind of goes all over the place, and the same principles, the concepts that we use, all come back to the fact that we know that there's that creative genius that exists inside. And I think some people shy away from, ooh, there's only a few geniuses really around. Well, you know what, that may be semantics. But I will tell you that there is brilliance inside of every single person, and just having the understanding that it exists starts to get that genius tapped into.
Well, I think that's wonderful. And are you seeing more of, because of kind of the education and where it's at, with the lack or the, you know, no art program, I mean, are you seeing more demand for, you know, in the education world, you know, for, you know, your workshops on creativity? Because that's really, you know, very much of a buzzword now, creativity and innovation.
I know, it really is, and you know, hopefully it's not a fad. Hopefully it's an evolution of understanding that that there is an entire new essence of what we need to bring to education. And I think, you know, if you look back throughout history, that it was very important in the late 1900s to really get everybody, you know, to work in this way and what, I mean, as far as, you know, certain dynamics and learning skills and getting in the Industrial Revolution, what all of that sort of expansion. But we've gone beyond that, and that that if we want to survive as a people, then the way to do that is not necessarily to grind in life harder or more hours. It is to figure out better ways to do what we do. And so, you know, that's why I think this buzzword, creativity, hopefully is not a fad. Like I said, the words mean nothing. It's what the concepts and the meaning behind them really are. But, yes, we are finding more people coming to us. There's a gentleman locally who's come to us, and there are new standards in the state of California on bringing creativity to as a standard within the education process, within the K through 12 education component, which has never been in there before, and that people have to then find out new information and be able to create their own information and then tie concepts together. So all of a sudden, it's not just memorization and you know, repeating it back, but it is actually, you know, finding something new, developing something, and bringing that into play. So it is starting to make its way into standard public education, and I think we're going to see that more and more, because that's what the universities want to see. That's what that's what businesses want to see. I mean, if you look back at Newsweek's 2010 July, there's an article in there that says that the number one thing that is one that is lacking, you know, that's starting to decline, that is ringing all the bells, is that creativity, for the first time since it was been tested since the late 1950s, has started to decline in our youth. And at the same time, IBM came out with a poll in either 2009 or 2010 saying that the number one criteria for leadership, or the most important factor for leadership in, I may have been internationally, I think it's a domestic, is creativity, not education. Not hard work, not all of these things. It's creativity. They need and want. They said that this is going to be the most important factor for leadership in the future, a poll of 1,500 CEOs throughout the country. So, you know, we need it more, and it's declining. So there is a gap there that needs to be filled. And hopefully, and there's, we're certainly not the only ones talking or having the focus that we need to inspire more creative genius out there, but we are committed to it.
Well, this has been terrific. We have a couple more minutes, and you know, I'm your cheerleader for creativity. That's what
I know you are,
too.
And I got to tell you, I am so excited about speaking at the TEDx conference you're putting together, and it's just going to be so much fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, thank you very much. So, but I want, you know, maybe I want listeners to be able to reach you. So I want, you know, telephone numbers or websites, and also just, you know, for yourself, what kinds of things, you know, do you do to kind of help to find or spark that creative genius that...
Well, you know, I think for me personally, and every person is going to be different. I can't sit here and say this is the way to creativity. It's kind of like... you know, someone walking along and stubbing their toe and having a great inspiration and going, I've got it. I know what the key is to creative inspiration. It's stubbing your toe. You know what, everybody, stub your toe. And you can't, you know, so how are you going to, you have to understand the one in my point of view, you need to know that it's there. And then you need to become as quiet as possible at times. And I know people go, what does that mean? But as far as how to, you know, there's listening. That is the key to me. And from those that I have heard and read and understand and see, is that, you know, beyond the chatter of the intellect, that's where you hear the creative genius come through. So it's only when things get quiet in your head, and everybody has that chattering voice that tells you something at every turn. But it's that whisper behind it where you go, oh, look at that. That says something to me. That's and pure and simply, that is it. So how you do that, I mean, how you get there, that's going to be different for every single person. But as far as me, I can be in the most crowded place in the world, and I can disconnect from everything that's going on and look around and have one of the most serene moments. And people think that's unique. It's available there all the time. And so I get some of my most interesting, I think my staff sometimes think that it's insanity, but, you know, that I get these very different ideas at the most, you know, obscure times. But I know it's when all of a sudden I'm very observant of what's going on around me, and I'm more just in an observant awareness mode, and things come. So, you know, and that's sort of what happens, you know, with the feedback that we get from people who've gone through the programs, that there's instance, and I mean instance, where there's all of a sudden these brilliant thoughts and ideas that come up, and if you're just aware for them. So,
How can I get in touch with you?
Well, you know what, the center's website, I mean, is probably always the best. It's, you know, chuckjonescenter.org, and for me, it's very simple. I'm Craig at chuckjonescenter.org. You know, the offices here if you phone numbers, I mean, you can always get phone numbers there, but, you know, the 949.
Well, the gallery, you do have a gallery in Tustin, which is close by, so
absolutely.
That address is...
And I'm usually here at our corporate office and there, so you can even stop by. We're over at, right now, the address is 3065 Edinger Avenue in Tustin, and so that's open 5 days a week during the week. And then the biggest change is that we are moving the Center for Creativity to the South Coast Collection over in Costa Mesa called SoCo, and that'll be as soon as October 15th is what's happening. We're having our Creativity Season fundraiser that night, and I'm sure they can get in touch with you, because I know you'll be there, right, Susan?
Yes, I will absolutely.
Of course
you're
going to
send me an invitation,
you know?
and you'll send me the information for the website. But I want to thank you so much, Craig. It's been such a pleasure to have you. And again, Craig's going to speak at TEDx SA Artist Village on Saturday, October 1st, at the Yost Theater in Santa Ana. And you can find more information at www.TEDxSAArtistVillage.com. I know it's a long name for a TEDx event, but Creative Orange County is a radio show, but it's also, more importantly, a think tank at the intersection of culture, commerce, and community in Orange County. And for more information on Creative Orange County, you can go to www.creativeorangecounty.com. So thank you again, Craig. And until next time, I think we're going to be on Thursday, actually, at 10, with some more interviews with the TEDx speakers. So until then, thank you.
Thank you, Susan.